You're recording.
Okay, welcome back. We are going to go to section five, administrative review of previous actions. We are going to start with number three, 1937, in regards to Crystal Delano, DDM. Quarterly board appearance is required by consent agreement. Board may review, discuss, and take action on information presented, and may return license to status. Hello, welcome to your final meeting. Ms. Sultan, you are the lead.
Yes, Dr. Delano, it is wonderful to see you again. I'm going to give you the floor so that you can tell us what the last almost 5 years have been like.
Okay, it's kind of short.
Yes, yes. It's what was important to you.
Yes. 5 years ago, I was not in a great place, not surrounded by the greatest people, and losing my license kind of woke me up. And I did what I had to do here, and worked really hard, and 5 years down the road, I am in the best place I've been in, not only since being a veterinarian, but just as a person. So, just kind of thankful, you know, I've always learned from my mistakes, and here's another one. So, it's part of life, and I've embraced it and made the best of it. So, that's it. Short.
Excellent. 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 I want to commend you on your hard work these last 5 years, and very happy to see the results. With that, I would like to make a motion that we return Dr. Delano's license to active status pronto.
Okay, we have a motion and a second to return Dr. Delano's license to active status. There's no further comments. I just want to say we're proud to have you in the profession.
Yes.
So, thank you. Keep up the good work. And I have not gotten 5 years old.
Neither am I.
Yes.
Okay.
So
all right.
I would add this isn't always a pleasurable experience, or not even pleasurable for us to be here. But this occasion, the final day, seeing the end results, this is a blessing, and this is one of the most grateful parts we have of our job.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yeah,
and Godspeed as well.
Yes. Thank you. Yes.
Okay. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Thank you. Feel free to, you know, pop in and say hi if you want to drive down.
Maybe not every 3 months, but
every once in a while. All
right. Best of luck.
Thank you very much.
Work.
Appreciate it.
Yes.
Lawyers, sure.
Very
sure
proud of you. So. Yes.
Okay, let's see. We are going to go to. Okay, now we are on same section number five, item number one, 2380, in regards to John Huntsberger, DMD. Board may review, discuss, and take action on testing information provided. This is also, we're going to combine it with another case, which is number 14 on the same agenda. We're on the same section. Please note that Dr. Nosley is recused. And Dr. Thompson, you are the lead.
Yes, so good afternoon. I guess it's still morning. Good morning, Dr. Huntsberger. I do have a couple of questions. So we got some results from your past two tests that were not necessarily in accordance with what we're expecting. So can we go into the testing of those of December and January?
I have contacted the testing company 3 times by email. I have heard nothing back. The only phone number I have to call them goes to the local office, and they tell me to email the supervisor, which is what I've done, and I've copied Victoria on all of those emails. And it's not too much trying to get their professional. I am not drinking. And all of the research I have been able to find, there is a lot of risk in some people for transdermal absorption of products that are processed into ETG and ET. I know in the December test, I was in surgery. I avoided the Avagard, which is a solution of Clorox and alcohol that does not require washing. So our normal procedure is you scrub in completely with surgical Clorox-ing scrub, and then in between surgeries, we use the Avagard prior to gloving in for the next procedure. So I did not. On that day, I did the first scrub with the provided packaged chlorhexidine, and then I used the scrub that came in the bottle, which is chlorhexidine. And when I got the test results, I went back and I read all the bottles and did some research because that's what I had. The chlorhexidine scrub brushes are chlorhexidine, but they also contain a product called minoxidil, which is an ethoxylated alkyl phenol. Phenols are processed into BTG precursors. Diastereate, maybe not, it's processed into ethylene oxide. Sodium hydroxymethyl glycinate is a paraben, which is found in urine of almost everybody. Does not say whether it's processed into a urine or if they're just looking for that product. And the surgical scrub, chloroxynol, is a perachloroethyl xylenol. Xylenol is a phenol, so that is processed in the same way. And propylene glycol, which I know is something to avoid. I did not know it was in surgical scrub. So basically, I scrubbed my hands four times and then put on a set of sterile rubber gloves for the procedures, which then prevented evaporation and promoted continued absorption. And the more research I had done before as far as absorption, and I have some of those references and some of the ones from this time, you can get ETG levels up to 1500 or more just from topical absorption. You can get ETS levels between 100 and 500 for repeated environmental exposure, as well as drinking. And those numbers are from healthline.com, Very Well Mind, La Hacienda, testing.com, and Science Direct. So that's the best I can do to tell you. I've not been drinking, and I found references that do support that it can be from topical exposure. I did contact my primary care physician, and she established a standing order at LabCorp for blood testing. So I will proceed with blood testing from here on out, which tests for the actual presence of ethanol. It does not test for processed byproducts, which is what the urine tests for. And if I do get, my plan is to continue with Outer Health for the random cycling. And if it comes on a Monday through Friday, you'll get the blood test done. If it comes on a weekend, and I will go and get the urine test done through them. But I prefer to stick with the one that's more accurate. The other reference from Science Direct is the test is 93% to 98% sensitive, which means it will detect true positives, but it's only 75% to 85% sensitive, which means up to 25% of the people will have false positives when they are not consuming alcohol.
Forgive me, Dr. Thompson, can I have Victoria jump in here and just kind of let us know where we're at in terms of her consent agreement and where these two positive hits, where we're at?
Okay. Madam Chair, members of the board, at the board's December meeting, the board voted to finalize her consent agreement, to make a final one, just making the change that she would appear quarterly instead of monthly, everything else remaining the same. The following day was the day I received the positive test. Therefore, I was uncomfortable issuing the final order without the board reviewing that information. Subsequently, there was another positive test, which is where we are now. I do want to point out that the lab that Dr. Hunsberger uses is the same one used by another licensee for over 5 years. And that person was also tested for alcohol and didn't have issues. Just wanted to point out that tidbit.
Okay.
So the confirmation test has been ordered.
Okay.
Pardon?
The confirmation test has been ordered.
Okay, but the confirmation test for the first one came back also positive.
Correct.
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 So now we're waiting on the confirmation for the second one.
And Dr. Hunsberger, can you tell me the dates that you did surgery?
Maybe.
I mean, I appreciate that we talked about the blood previously and then, didn't really go anywhere with it. And so I think myself is trying to decide whether we actually want to put that in, whether that's best to put into the consent agreement that we are actually going to change, because we've just had a bumpy road. And and again, this hasn't taken place with our, with our other individuals who are in the same lab. So do we just need to have in your consent agreement that we are going to, here on out, move forward blood testing, not necessarily, blood during the week, urine on the week, I don't know.
And that was only because Beaver Health is open on the Saturday and Sunday in LabCorp and Quest, Sonora Quest, or not.
Are not. Okay, so this is where, asking, our council too, how specific we want or need, because again, what I'm concerned is if we, okay, so we do blood a couple times and then things are going well and then we end up in a urine test again and it's, you're spending a lot of time, but so is our staff. And then we're waiting, on the lab to get back with us. And I think we've really tried to work with you. And I think we've been pretty, easygoing as far as ultimately we could have, lifted your stay of your suspension. And so, but you got to understand the position that we're in here. It's like, I appreciate all of your research. And I know we've gotten some things as well, looking at whether, this can truly happen. And I'm sure that it can, but I just, to be able to really move forward smoothly, I think we've just got to get the blood test. And so again, I don't know how specific we want it in, the consent agreement, what makes the most sense, but, I don't know, that's where I'm at. It looks like Jane wants to.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Yes. Under the current consent agreement, which is an interim consent agreement, it states that if there's a positive result, the stay will be lifted and the suspension will go into effect. Have there been any cases that you can recall where there has been such positive results and we have not lifted the stay?
I'm not aware of any.
So this would, if we did not lift the stay, we would be setting a precedent.
You can say that.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
In regards to Dr. Thompson, for, I don't know how far back you want, for December, I was in surgery the 7th, the 14th, the 21st, the 28th, January 4th, 9th, 11th, and I'm scheduled tomorrow.
And did you, when you had your test on December 14th, was that before or after work?
After work. They don't open until 11 o'clock.
Okay. Thank you.
And that's the other blood test I can do anytime between 7 and 3. So if you want me to go at lunchtime, I can do that. If you want me to go before work, I And I do understand the other person didn't have any problems, but from what I have researched, it's an individual sensitivity for absorption. And I got a positive test from using Voltaren, because that's the only thing I could come up with that had alcohol in it. So I'm obviously more sensitive than a lot of people.
So So ultimately, it sounds like if we were moving forward on blood only, then that is only something that can randomly be done Monday through Friday, right? Since it's not open. There's no way for you to get that either, right?
I don't know if I can go to the ER. I haven't pursued that. I don't know if that's possible, but that's the only place I can find that would have opening on the weekend.
And then remind me, are you monthly or bi-monthly?
Monthly.
This is a really tough situation because I think it needs to be monthly and I think it needs to go to blood testing for her sake and for ours. Like, I think she's saying the same thing. I think the question is it's not okay to say great men lots aren't going to happen on the weekend. So I don't think we want to go to urine on the weekend. I mean, I guess we could, but then we're going to be back in the same situation with positives and not knowing what to do about it.
How long does the blood takes? Goes back though, so even if, I mean, can't we say if who determines the randomness of it? Is it, it's the lab, right?
Yes.
So they know they're only open, so why wouldn't they just randomly choose her during Monday through Friday, knowing that it goes back anyway, so.
Yeah, but then if, assuming devil's advocate, if then the person would be like, great, I can drink all weekend, I just can't drink during the week. Yeah, I'm never gonna get pulled on the weekend.
Blood takes, goes back though, farther.
So you may want to consider, there's two kinds of alcohol blood tests that you guys can order. One is the ETG ETS, right? That's the short in time snapshot. The other type is a PEP test. It's also a blood test for alcohol, but it takes a 2 week look instead of a more immediately. ETG and ETS go out of your system relatively quickly. A PEP test will stretch it out. So you may want to consider doing a, you know, ETG, ETS. If you're testing twice a month, one of them is ETG, ETS, and the other one is a PEP test.
But the problem is I'm testing positive for ETG and ETS on urine, so why would I not test positive on blood when it's the same metabolite that they're testing? I don't know enough about the PEP test. I will happily look into it to find out if that's also testing something that's a metabolite, not the actual product.
So alcohol is alcohol, and these are the tests that are available. The reason that labs have the cutoffs they have is because of environmental contaminants. You can have, if she doesn't want to challenge, if she's saying, I want to go to blood, fine, she can go to blood. I mean, that's an option. I just wanted the board to know that there are two types of blood tests that are available. In the event she doesn't want to challenge one of these tests, there are lab employees called toxicologists. And board staff can reach out to the lab and have, or actually, she can do it too, have a toxicologist opine on the lab, the whether or not this indicates active consumption versus passive environmental contamination.
I know that's what she's attempted.
Yes, I don't know if you were here. I emailed the supervisor at the lab 3 times requesting someone to call me, whether it be him or a lab technician, so I can talk to them.
Well,
yes, I can. I don't have a number to call him.
And these aren't usually telephone calls. They have a MRO, medical review officer, who will actually write. It makes it sound like it's more than just the little paragraph that I've seen the MROs do, right? It's just like a couple of sentences saying reviewed and explained or remains confirmed positive. There are ways to follow up on these sorts of tests. But mostly my point was to make the board aware that there are two types of blood alcohol tests.
I don't think you want to have to go to more regular testing. And again, I don't know that that would even benefit us either. But if you, you know, we're doing
question I asked him was the interpretation of the ETS value. The range is from 100 to 25,000, and I came in at 133. So just as a reference, it was in that range of other exposure according to the internet websites.
Okay.
Madam Chair, can I ask, and I think this is more plausible, because it sounds like there's a question, at least among some of us, whether this is actually happening or not. But if there's a population of people that these products have this effect on, should some kind of medical professional be able to establish that and document that and give us that information? Oh, this particular person has that condition versus, yeah, somebody else who went to use the same facility never had an issue. Well, they didn't have that condition. I mean, how do we know?
I mean, we would think that an addictionologist would be able to do that, right? They probably deal with other people that have addictions that have the same condition, right? Like, I don't know that an addictionologist is that special. We do not have any addictionologist report on Dr. Huntsberger.
I have one at a time here.
Well, it seems like it'd be a forensic toxicologist person, not an addictionologist.
Well, I mean, I'm just wondering, like,
I didn't know that field of medicine exists.
I don't either, but I mean, you think an addictionologist would know who that is that would tell them that, because they would deal with these cases over and over?
Yeah.
Right,
that
but they may not.
That may be a way to find them, yeah.
Yes.
But it would be nice to have that versus, I mean.
Or what if you move to the blood and then, I'm trying to make this easier, not harder, but if we move to the blood and all of a sudden, we're doing well again. I mean, I think
what
we don't have to track down this forensic.
What if the same thing happens? I mean,
I think we need to see if we can get a hold of somebody at the lab to get the report on the one that was positive that then had the second test that was also positive, and get their opine on how they're interpreting that. So I think somehow we need to get that from the lab. I think we need to get the confirmation test on the second one that was positive, and probably get the same person to weigh in on that one. And then I think we need to say, moving forward, is this longer term blood test a better way for us to go so that we don't keep getting, I would think the lab would be able to tell us that, get this, so that we don't keep getting these same weird results. And if those aren't something that's reasonable, because we're going to still get positives because of whatever is still being picked up, then maybe we need to go back to an addictionologist and say, okay, what do we do here? I don't, because this is outside the realm of any of our expertise.
I mean, yes.
And I don't know how we can judge it with the information that we have right now.
Okay, within our scope, Madam Chair, is the current interim consent agreement. And the question I think before us now is, are we going to enforce it or not?
And Ms. Solomon, could you tell me which line that is? Because I see in the current interim consent agreement that if we have a positive test, the board may require the respondent to increase the frequency of testing.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear the last part of that.
Speaking of the microphones.
If a positive test occurs, the board may require the respondent to increase the frequency of testing. So I'm asking which line specifically you saw where the suspension would be.
The confirmed positive? Okay, where we have two positive, more than one positive?
Could you tell me which line that is?
I don't have the agreement up.
Okay.
So
it's because there's a state suspension status.
Yes.
And any violation or non-compliance constitutes immediate suspension.
Okay.
But I don't have a line number either. I'm trying to look for it.
I'm more than happy to talk to my physician and see if there's some type of testing or something that they can do for skin absorption of things. I don't know.
And we don't know the expertise of your physician, unfortunately. So.
Well, but that's where you start, right? Because I mean, that's what we ask all these people that come before us with this type of situation. We ask them to have a primary care that knows what everybody else is doing, right?
Okay.
So that primary care is going to be the key to help find whoever that person is anyway.
I mean,
and then they need to stay informed.
And we usually have also an addictionologist who's done an evaluation, can recommend any type of additional test or different tests that can be done. We just had that happen in another case.
I'm just not sure, you know, I mean, it seems plausible. It's on, you know, they got stuff in the Mayo Clinic and everything else, so, I mean, it seems reasonable and within logic that this could happen. How do you document that? Yes, it happens in this individual, but not this one.
Okay, so we have a couple things that we have to decide, whether we are changing anything in the consent, current, interim consent agreement. Do we want to go into a final consent agreement? Do we want to hold off? Do we want to make any changes? And then, of course, are we doing anything today with regard to her license status?
So definitely not comfortable extending the quarterly.
Correct.
With the information we have. I think we need to get more information and then we can make that decision. I think going to the primary and seeing how do I test myself to see if I'm one of these eye absorbers from skin products or whatever. I just don't know how you do that. I mean, and hopefully the regular doctor would be able to know that. Like, that's just not something that we would know. But I think the expectation of the board would be that next time we see you, we have answers to these things. And if it's not your primary care, it might be going to an addictionologist and finding out whether they have ways of testing for this. And I think that actually falls on you to figure that out. But I don't think we can continue making recommendations when we don't have the right information.
And to add to that, Dr. James, I think that we need it in writing and from a third party that is, you know, has the expertise to offer such a.
Okay.
I know, talking to my counselor, I do have a psychiatrist appointment in March, just to follow up from before. It was not even in the agreement, but I started it. I just see her right, probably about every 6 months. I can ask my counselor about addictionologists. I don't know if there's any even close, but I will find out.
And the board can also issue an interim order for an evaluation by an addictionologist as well. And that would sort of formalize it and require her to take the action. There are addictionologists that the board has used in the past and that are approved, and then that might get you a good solid opinion.
Have we found, because I think I recall one of the other cases, it wasn't hard to get in these people. Is that the addictionologist?
I didn't hear all you said, I apologize.
I think I recall on past cases that the appointment times on getting into addictionologists actually takes some time. Do you think that's something that with the ones we've had in the past, we'd be able to get this information by next month? Like if we said go to the addictionologist, we're gonna put that in the
room. So usually the way I see these boards issue these orders is an appointment to be schedule an appointment with 30 days, and with the scheduling the appointment within 30 days and completing the appointment within 60. That 60-day time frame seems to give the addictionologist time to get it on his or her schedule. But then there's also usually a 30-day delay after that. I mean, realistically, a 30-day delay after that to get the report.
So if you have a list, please send it to me.
Is it reasonable to get all the things from the lab that we already mentioned, to recommend contacting her regular physician to see if they know if there's a way she can be tested for this condition, and also setting up an appointment with an addictionologist within 30 days to be seen within 60 days so that we have more information? Is that a reasonable response?
I'm not, I mean, my experience with other boards is, I mean, I think follow-up with the lab and getting whatever information the lab has, because the addictionologist is going to want to see that, and, you know, the more information you have, the better you can render, and I think all that makes sense. I have not seen, nor would I necessarily anticipate a PCP to have sort of, it's a specialty. Addiction medicine is a specialty, and these people receive training, including, I'm still learning the medical stuff, but they receive years of training specifically in addiction medicine, which is not something that a PCP has. So usually I don't see boards do follow up with your PCPs, because that's like, you know, they
probably not warrant any real information.
It's not gonna get you what you really want, which should come from an addiction medicine doctor.
Definitely talk with my counselor. She's a LISA, through Spectrum Health Group. See if she has any recommendations or they have any references of where I can contact somebody.
So I would recommend that the board issue an interim order for an evaluation by an addiction medicine doctor. That addiction medicine doctor should be pre-approved by board staff. That way, board staff can confirm the qualifications.
And then Victoria, remind me, we hear from Dr. Hunsberger's, the responsible, that he just submits that little summary every quarter, right, or is it every month?
Madam Chair, it's actually not the responsible vet, it's the hospital manager, who it's my understanding does not live or work in Arizona.
That's out of state, okay. So, because I'm just throwing this out there, if there's uncomfortableness with not taking any action on her license. So you know that your current employer is very supportive of you. If hearing from them, or maybe your actual direct supervisor sending us something, you know, giving more comfort that while we're waiting for some of these things to come through, that, okay.
I can get a letter from the doctors I work with every day, the staff, the technician, my husband who I live with, my AA people. They all know that I'm not drinking because they knew me when I was drinking.
So we'll just try that.
I don't know how many or what you want.
My concern, Madam Chair, is regarding the setting of a precedent. We have a number of substance abuse cases that we deal with. So if we don't follow the direction of the consent agreement on this, then what happens when hiccups occur in our other cases? We don't have the expertise to determine any of this, just like we don't have the expertise to do a psych evaluation or an addiction evaluation. We rely on the experts for that, so.
The issue I have here, because I hear you, Jane, I don't like the idea of not following what we put forth.
Yeah.
But I don't think we know we have a true positive. If we had a positive, yes, we would pull and go back to we have a positive. What I don't know is we have positives that may or may not be real. And that's what we need to know. Like, until I feel like we know we have a real positive, I don't know.
That's my position. We really don't know because we're not the experts at that.
And
we really don't know whether it's positive or really positive or not. We don't.
But then James,
so are
right,
we going to question every positive
right.
that comes back on
anybody
any
came?
Sorry.
Yeah. I mean,
if
we
it's reasonable to question it, yes.
I think we would happen. If these values were much higher and there's no way that could be environmental contamination, then I think we would be having a different discussion. But they are just barely over threshold, and there is a plausible explanation for why. And so we need to be careful about our next steps without knowing for sure that that's actually what it is.
Yeah, I'm not comfortable saying, yes, absolutely, I believe that's positive. And she gave her just a lot of her basis. I don't believe that.
Okay.
So, yeah, I'm not, so Madam Chair, I would move that we stick with the interim agreement we have now. Amend that to add the addictionologist in 30 days, scheduled, or an appointment within 30 days, appointment had, or had the named within 30 days, appointment within 60 days, and come back to us and report everything that she possibly can, copy Victoria on it, on anything she gets back from somebody or inquires of somebody when she's looking for this help, to find out, hey, am I one of this population, and what is that percentage of people, and how much information can I give the board that this is really happening, or not?
And Mr. Logie, I think that makes a lot of sense, but, so we're not amending the interim consent agreement, you know, repeatedly. The interim consent agreement continues, so she's required to test as she is required to test, which is right now twice a month under the interim consent agreement. The board is able to issue an interim order for an addictionologist evaluation. I would suggest that you go ahead and issue that, get that information back, and then based upon that addictionologist evaluation, then you'll be able to craft a final consent agreement with all of the terms that the addictionologist recommends.
I rescind my motion. Make a motion to an interim order.
Second.
With all those same
situations. Second.
Okay, so we have a motion and a second.
And included in that is directing board to see if they can get any information from the lab.
You know, it is frustrating, and I think that's a separate question for the AG. Can we subpoena or compel these people to answer? They're not answering their customer who's paying for it. They're not answering us who we're supposed to get reports. How do we compel them to answer? I think that's a separate legal question, maybe.
Well, so the way that the wonderful thing about an interim order is interim orders are wonderful things. Part of the language in the interim order is respondent has to provide that information to the evaluator. An addictionologist should be able to look at what the cutoff is, listen to her explanation, and come to that determination himself. In the event he needs any additional information from the lab that did the testing, she would be required to get that for. And I keep saying him just because the ones I know happen to be male, but there's women out there doing it too. My daughter would kill me if I didn't say that. So that should be all, an interim order will round that out for you guys.
And to add, just to clarify, I started to call you Dr. Lohi. Mr. Lohi, you should be a doctor after all this time on the board. Mr. Lohi, do you think that includes the recommendations to include a treatment plan also as related to this case?
Yes, so absolutely. Yeah.
That'll be part of the addiction.
Thank you.
Okay. So we have a motion.
And a second.
We should do a roll call since we're changing. We're doing an order.
Sounds good.
Dr. Byrne?
Aye.
Ms. Krieger?
Aye.
Ms. Frost?
Aye.
Dr. Jane is an aye. Mr. Lohi?
Aye.
Ms. Solomon?
Aye.
And Dr. Thompson?
Aye. Okay, so does that conclude both of our pieces for her, both agenda items, right?
Madam Chair, we still have the outstanding matter that at the December meeting the board did vote to finalize the consent agreement. So I believe that you need to rescind that motion.
Yes.
Or put it on hold. Can we put it on hold?
Sure. That what they had done was vote to finalize the interim order. So the conversation today, I'm understanding, is that they wanted the interim to continue.
Yes.
So do they need to rescind the motion from December?
Right.
or does it just go on hold?
We, just a point of additional information, we will probably want to integrate the treatment plan that comes out of that evaluation into the final consent agreement. So I think we should go ahead and rescind. That's going to be months off.
If you make that a motion, I'll second.
Okay.
So moved, yes.
Second.
Okay, so we have a motion and a second to rescind the interim consent agreement that we voted on December 13th. No further discussion. Should we do roll call? Sorry.
Madam Chair, just because I apologize, just the phrasing of what you said was to rescind the interim consent agreement.
No, I'm sorry.
Is that what you're doing?
Okay,
just rescinding the motion to finalize.
Finalize, correct. Sorry. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Okay. Let's do roll call again.
Dr. Byrne?
Aye.
Ms. Krieger?
Aye.
Ms. Frost?
Aye.
Dr. James is an aye. Mr. Obi?
Aye.
Ms. Solomon?
Aye.
And Dr. Thompson?
Aye.
Okay, motion passes. All right, thank you. And we'll look forward to seeing you again soon and hopefully getting some updates. So,
did you decide if you wanted a letter or something from the people on work